Inside Red Bull Bora Hansgrohe, the OVB online podcast on the Tour de France. For 3 weeks, we join team manager Ralf Denk as he leads the biggest and most successful German cycling team through the Tour de France. Do you have questions for Ralf Denk? Send them to tobias.ruf@ovbmedia.de. And now enjoy the new episode.
Tim Mallier also wins in Bergerac, marking his second stage victory at this Tour de France. Tadej Pogacar remains in the yellow jersey. Red Bull Bora Hansgrohe brings the captain safely to the finish. We are discussing the eighth day of this tour, as always, with the team manager of Red Bull Bora Hansgrohe. So, hello to Ralf Denk.
Hello and greetings to Rosenheim.
Ralf, start us off. How did the day go for you? Did everyone get through it well and relatively relaxed?
Yes, it was actually relatively relaxed for us today. I actually thought, just as I mentioned yesterday, that more teams would ride offensively. But in the end, it was just three riders again who sought salvation in a breakaway and also got very, very far. At least one of them almost made it to the finish line. He was only caught at the 1.3 kilometer mark. But otherwise, for the riders focusing on the general classification, it was a quiet day because the necessary crosswinds were missing to make the race a bit harder.
Yes, while we are at it, let us take a look at today. So a three-man breakaway group, which then breaks up. Liam Slock from Lotto tried it on his own. Was that tactically unwise at that moment or finally courageous? Although regarding your criticism yesterday that many teams are actually too passive, well, his team, Lotto Intermarché, must be excluded from that criticism. At least they are trying. How did you see it that he thinks to himself in that moment, okay, I'll give it a try, because it really wasn't missing much?
Yes, well, first of all, you have to pay the Intermarché Lotto team a compliment. They are really represented in every breakaway group. It is a very traditional team from Belgium, and they understand that. They take that very seriously. I think that's good. It makes the race more attractive. And whether they should have kept riding as a trio or whether he sought salvation by escaping alone, well, that only he can decide on the spot, right there in the thick of the lead group. If he feels strong enough to ride faster alone than with the other two as help, well, then he has to go. Then there is no other option. But if the others still have a bit left, it is often smarter to take them along for a while. If he already has the feeling, and you notice this in the lead group, am I the strongest, the second strongest, or the weakest when the lead group is three men strong, you notice that. And he will have made the decision at some point. Yeah, it is obviously super, super bitter for him to be caught 1,300 meters from the finish. But if I go back to what I said yesterday, if there had been maybe 5, 6, or 7 riders, the group would have worked more harmoniously with everyone using less energy, and then it surely would have been enough for him.
Is that something the sprint teams can time exactly, or is there a certain amount of risk involved?
Yes, if the group in front is not too large and the route is not too difficult in terms of topography, then a rule of thumb is 1 minute per 10 kilometers. And if you look at today's finale, that rule of 1 minute per 10 kilometers actually fit quite well regarding how much faster a peloton rides compared to a breakaway group, or in this case, a lone breakaway rider who has been out all day. And he still had a 1 minute lead with 10 kilometers to go. And in the end, it just wasn't quite enough.
Incredible. Let's move on to the sprint. I'll even go as far as to say that Tim Mallier is by far the fastest sprinter in this tour. He wasn't well positioned at all, really, and he powered through the wind with total ease. That was a real show of force.
Yes, you also have to pay a compliment to the Sudal Quickstep team, because they also did the main chasing work during the race together with the Alpecin Dessunink team, and the team invested tested, they also left manpower out on the road. That means, yes, the team was no longer complete in the finale. Even their let out man, Bert van der Berger, had already dropped out, so he was missing for Tim Merlier too. That is why he took a bit of a gamble in the sprint, coming from quite far back, but with real speed. And yes, he is currently the best and won in a confident and well-deserved manner.
Exactly. Before we go into the background, a quick general question. 8-day Tour de France. How is everyone's health on your team? Is everyone fit, or are there any physical aches, pains, or anything more serious? What is the situation?
No, everything is going according to plan. Everyone is healthy and has no aches or pains, which is already good after 8 days of racing. And I hope it stays that way.
Exactly. We have seen it differently before. So positive news from Red Bull Bora Hansgrohe. Now over to the background. Let us talk about the topic of media at the Tour de France today. Before you give us some exciting insights, a few facts. 190 countries are showing the Tour de France. The international feed has 110 hours of live coverage. The videos on the official platforms reach over 1 billion views. There are many, many more impressive figures. Long story short, it is a gigantic sporting event that overshadows much more than just cycling, right?
You could certainly say the Tour de France is the media machine of cycling. And it is a world cultural heritage, the Tour de France. It has already been held over 100 times, and you have already mentioned a few facts. I will add that there are over 2,000 accredited journalists on site who, of course, all want to do their job as well as possible, which I naturally understand and which we as a team also respect. And we are also glad they are there because they spread the stories. And if a Remco and a Florian do not quite see eye to eye in the finale or misunderstand each other, for us, it was a minor thing. In the race, it was a minor thing, but you saw how big that gets. That is just the Tour de France. And so when the bus pulls into the paddock, the team bus, and then when I or when the head sports director, Pachi Vila, get off the bus, well, then you often have 20, 30, 40 microphones shoved in your face. And then you're asked, what do you have to say about yesterday's incident? So all in all, deeply, deeply impressive, the Tour de France. And it is also a fact that the Tour de France is the largest recurring annual sporting event. What do I mean by that? The Football World Cup and the Olympics are still larger in terms of media reach, but they are not every year, only every 4 years. And the Tour de France is every year. And it is also impressive for me when I move around backstage and see the amount of cables from the broadcast trucks that are set up and taken down every day. We don't have a stadium, so it's a hell of a lot of work. All the broadcast trucks and the satellite dishes and everything you need. So the viewers get a great TV picture that is set up every day and then taken down only to be set up again the next day in the next location. So it is truly, truly impressive, all the logistics that go into that.
Yes, that must be mountains of cables, of equipment, and it's hard to imagine, you know, in your mind's eye. You really have to see it for yourself, right?
Yes, it is still very, very impressive to me, even though it is my 13th Tour de France. And yes, I have also been to Ruhpolding for the biathlon. That is biathlon. That is also impressive what is there, but it just stays there for a week. And in cycling, it is transported from A to B every day. So I actually find that even more impressive that it is so big and then so decentralized that it is set up and taken down somewhere else every day.
The fringe director, the person in charge, actually flies over the race route in a helicopter several times beforehand.
What also adds to that is that it is not so easy to produce great television images of cycling. So that is very, very elaborate compared to a sport that takes place in a stadium, because there you have stationary cameras, and now they also use drones. But to bring cycling into the living room, you need helicopters, you need cameramen on motorcycles, and then you need relay planes. So you need a lot of equipment to really deliver a great picture to cycling fans in their living rooms.
You have come up with something new from a media perspective. Before we get to that, a general question. What does your media work look like on site? How many people are involved? Is it different from a Giro, a Vuelta, or other tours? Give us a brief overview first, and then we will look at the new YouTube format.
Yes, we naturally want to offer our racers the best possible support here. And that is why we have two press officers on site. One takes care of the in-demand Florian Lipowitz, and the other of the in-demand Remco Evenepoel, so that they always have a press officer by their side to support them and take the pressure off. Well, not every rider finds it easy to speak to the media, and this is meant to give the riders a sense of security. Then, of course, we want to report on it, because the Tour de France is a huge marketing machine, and our partners generate about 80% of their annual advertising value from the Tour de France. And that is why the Tour de France is so important. And we naturally want to use this platform as a team in the best possible way. And that is why we also have people for content with us, photographers, videographers, and the whole thing naturally also has to be edited then. And we have a YouTube format that's between 8 and 10 minutes, where, or before the next stage, the previous day is shown. What happened? And we want to show exactly this image, what the television viewer actually doesn't see, but what happens behind the scenes. What is the special thing about our sport? We actually want to bring that closer to the cycling enthusiasts. And that's why we have 6 content people on site.
Yes.
And then we have, and that is also the beauty of our project, that at the Red Bull Media House, we also have people who then edit the daily format in Salzburg for us. So from a team perspective, it is also a huge machine. And anyone who is interested, not just in the podcast, but also in seeing the visuals, can check out our YouTube format on Red Bull Bora Hans Kroij.
Exactly, I thought as much. So what we have been discussing here for 7 years is captured in really superbly executed footage. Was that Netflix series, which is no longer around, about the Tour de France, a bit of the approach where you thought, this could be the direction, because it is a premiere, the Inside Tour de France format. Check it out on the Red Bull Bora Hans Kroij YouTube channel. You can see it there. Was that perhaps the idea to say,
The Netflix seasons have done the entire sport and us as a team a lot of good. They explained the sport, which is often more complex than, say, a football match. We generated a lot of reach through that. We made our sport bigger. Why doesn't that exist anymore? That was a bit of a problem, because not every team saw it that way. And not every team approached the Netflix topic as openly as we do now at Red Bull Bora Hans Kroij. We really celebrated it, but some other teams were a bit more closed off about it. And then, of course, it's hard for Netflix to create behind-the-scenes content and tell the stories that you don't see in the live TV broadcast. And unfortunately, that's why the Netflix series no longer exists. And that's why we decided, if there's no more Netflix, then we'll just make our own.
Exactly. So, as I said, the Red Bull Bora Hans Kroij YouTube channel, check it out. Exciting insights. You briefly mentioned the riders. For some, it comes easily. For others, it is not so easy. Do the riders get media coaching?
Yes, we support the drivers to be professional in dealing with the media, but also to learn when it is okay to say no. So basically, yes, the basics. But as I said, some are born with it. Others perhaps aren't quite as natural at speaking to the media. One person is glad when it's over. Another says, okay, that doesn't bother me at all. But that is exactly what press officers are there for, to control that to a certain extent. But I also expect my press officers not to filter too much, because we do want to get the story out there. And if everything is just filtered, you often end up with those slick interviews that you might know from other sports. But that is actually not my approach at all. And I want to make our sport bigger. So you have to be able to take a few things and sometimes just speak your mind.
You're speaking from the heart of a sports journalist. It's not a given, I can confirm that. In closing, how has it developed? 13th Tour de France for you. When you look back at the first and second Tour de France, sure, the team was smaller then and expectations were different. But if you were to paint the big picture, how has this media attention and everything that goes with it developed over the 13 years we are talking about now?
Yes, the Tour de France was indeed already very big 13 years ago. I don't think there has been that much extreme growth since then. Sure, they have increased their reach, but the Tour de France machinery on site was similar 13 years ago to what it is now. What has changed within our team is massive. 13 years ago, we entered the race with a wild card. We were just happy to be there. We didn't dream of winning stages or competing for the top 10, but we still managed it in our first year with seventh place with Leopold Koenig. It was a huge success for us as a wildcard team. But we went into it completely without pressure, half the staff, roughly like today. So it was still much, much more hands-on for us. But cycling itself was also much, much more hands-on back then. And in the last 13 years, an arms race has definitely taken place among the teams. The budgets of the top teams, I am talking about the top team 13 years ago compared to the top team today, that has tripled, quadrupled, and there is simply much, much more money involved now. And the teams are naturally dealing with many, many more details than 13 years ago. That is also a reason why cycling is so fast right now, why it is not just Tadej Pogacar breaking record after record on the climbs, but the whole peloton, including Florian Lipowitz and Remco Evenepoel, they are improving their personal bests year after year. That is one reason why the teams are investing so much more and putting in so much more effort into the details.
Exactly. So let's look at tomorrow. Let's get back to the sport. It starts at 13:35. Expected arrival is 17:45. From Malemort, it goes to Ussel in the Massif Central. 185 kilometers will be ridden, 3,300 meters of climbing. One climb of the fourth, two of the third, and one of the second category. That sounds very, very, very suspicious for a breakaway group.
Yes, I already said yesterday that I expect a larger breakaway group today, which might even reach the finish. I wasn't that far off. Liam almost made it to the finish, but well, not quite. And for tomorrow, I'm pretty certain. I would say there is an 80% chance that a breakaway group will reach the finish line tomorrow. And yes, we will also talk to our riders today, who feels good, who is motivated for tomorrow. I don't think it will be a day where there are changes in the top 10. So where the riders fighting for the top 10 will try to outdo each other tomorrow. But a climber type rouleur has a good chance of a stage win tomorrow, I think. And I hope that many hands go up tonight from those who want to and those who are willing to try something tomorrow.
Yes, but can you, I mean, under normal circumstances, I would agree with that 100%, but I don't trust Pogacar at all. With him, you really have to be on your guard, even if the paper says something completely different. But if he's in the mood, I wouldn't rule anything out with him. You know what I mean.
No, he's a winner, a 100% winner with the right attitude and the right mentality, but also with the right legs. He always wants to win, yes, but he also wants to win the Tour de France. And for a dominator like him, that is a tightrope walk, because every time he, let's say, wants to win the stage, he has to push himself to the limit to win a stage here. That also weakens the immune system. Something could still happen. You could also crash. I do not know if he goes to the limit on every stage and takes the full risks. Good for the sport, of course. He is more of a risk taker as a person, which I find quite cool, but I do not think so for tomorrow. I think it will be the breakaway tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. What difference does it make that Monday is a rest day? In plain English, are there some who say, yes, now I'll really go all out because I have the rest day on Monday? Or is that irrelevant?
No, the riders who are, let's say, the candidates for the win tomorrow, a strong climber and ruler, when it comes to the stage win tomorrow, they will all go into the red. And of course, they look forward to a rest day, but you don't really factor that in at the start, because when it's about a stage win, it doesn't matter if there's a rest day the next day or not. You just go into the red.
Then we will see tomorrow who went into that deep red zone where the hands went up at Red Bull Bora Hansgrohe. They are fit. You brought us closer to that and much more again today. Thank you very much for that. Have a nice evening. And we will hear each other again tomorrow after the ninth stage, of course. Thanks, Ralph.
My pleasure. And best regards to Rosenheim.
That was the latest edition of Inside Red Bull Bora Hansgrohe, the podcast from OVB Online on the Tour de France. You can find the podcast on all common podcatchers and on the websites of OVB Media and IPN Media. Thanks for listening and see you in the next episode.